Matthew chapter 17, verses 24 through 27. Matthew chapter 17, verse 24. And when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, Doth not your master pay tribute? He saith, Yes. And when he was come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, What thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? Peter said unto him, Of strangers. And Jesus saith unto him, Then are the children free. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go thou to the sea and cast an hook, and take up the fish that first comes up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and thee. You'll notice that Jesus said in verse 26, Then are the children free. And I think that's a very catchy sermon title. Children are free. Because I hear it on the radio and sometimes see it on television that at certain motels and hotels in this vacation season that we're involved in now, that many of them advertise that children are free. And if we're not careful as we look at that statement of Jesus, it might lead us to think that this free here has to do with out obligation or without cost. But it really doesn't have anything to do with it, but I surely wanted to use a catchy phrase if I could, because I'm often accused of being unable to use modern day circumstances to illustrate my sermon. So mark this one up to me, if you would please, as having absolutely nothing to do with one another but the fact that I am conscious of my inability to relate to the modern world. Jesus and his disciples had come to Capernaum, and they were approached by those who collect money for the temple maintenance. They questioned Peter about Jesus, and Jesus was going into the house to find out exactly where Jesus stood and what he ought to do, when Jesus interrupts him and then makes the statement, after Peter answers a couple of questions, Then are the children free. So instead of using this rather catchy statement as a sermon text, let's try to understand it in the context of the Word of God and in which it was spoken. They that received tribute money came to Peter and said, Doth not your master pay tribute? The word that's translated tribute money is a word that means a double drachma. And a drachma was a coin. And therefore, the statement really is, they that received the double coin. And that wouldn't make any sense to me or you either one unless we did some studying. And we'd find out if we studied that a double drachma was a Jewish coin worth about 30 cents. And this was the yearly tax that every Jew was to pay to the temple treasury at Jerusalem. And this was based upon the scriptures that are written in the book of Exodus. Turn to Exodus chapter 30 so that we can understand that this was not some tax that Herod or other political figure had placed upon the nation of Israel. This was a religious tax. Exodus chapter 30, verse 13. This they shall give every one that passeth among them that are numbered, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary. A shekel is 20 gerahs, and half shekel shall be the offering of the Lord. Then in verse 15, the rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel, when they give an offering unto the Lord to make an atonement for your souls. So the basis of collecting this coin was the enumerating of the children of Israel and the fact that every person was to give a certain amount of money once a year. And this money was to go to the temple or the tabernacle to support the worship of that particular centrally located place of worship. And every person was to give the same amount. It's sort of an extraordinary thing that we're not talking about the rich giving a lot and the poor not giving much. And I know the idea of tithing comes to your mind, the idea that everybody gives a certain percentage of their income. Well, tithing as it's described in the Old Testament is far from the kind of tithing that we generally teach and preach today from the viewpoint of the New Testament church. Tithing in the Old Testament had to do with an increase every year. If you had 100 cattle and the increase of your cattle was 50, then that year you gave a tenth of the 50, not of the 150. So it was much different. But here, the idea is that every single person, every male that is enumerated, must give exactly the same amount. And it wasn't very much. It wasn't as though it amounted individually to much money at all, but it did, in its accumulation, account for a great deal of money. But you'll notice, the rich pay a small amount, and the poor pay exactly the same amount. There is some, I think, equality in this. You know, sometimes, and we have this idea, that in order for there to be an equality, there must be a graduation of percentage that is directed toward the people who are wealthy. And that the poor people really shouldn't pay anything. You know how that's crept into our tax system today. That poor people ought not to pay anything. But rich people are people who have ought to give much of what they have. And to me, I see our own system as it has developed where people who don't work are excused from paying anything, and people who do work have more and more of their salary taken from them. To me, that's an inequality. There's a lot of talk today about a flat tax in America, where everybody would just pay 10%, no matter how poor you were or how rich you were. And others have said, well, that's fine up to a point, but then we need a graduated tax. Whatever our idea of fairness is, whatever our philosophy of who ought to pay what, God said in the nation of Israel, there is a set amount and I want every person to pay this amount. So these people who came to Jesus, they were not evil people. And they were not seeking money for some bad activity. These weren't people whom Jesus ought to turn and rebuke like the money changers in the temple. These were honest men who were collecting an honest tax for a scriptural project. So it was sort of confusing that perhaps they assumed that Jesus would not pay. So the man who was collecting these taxes, the Bible tells us that they came to Peter and they asked, "Doth not your master pay tribute?" And I suppose this was a question that they asked for information. It was not a trick question. Because you'll see a little later that Jesus uses the statement, lest we should offend them. And I think that's an important statement that we're going to have to look at, not only today, but next Sunday. And this next Sunday, because we're going to see this word offend in connection with children, in connection with brothers, and in connection with the church, and in connection with the world. But doesn't your master, your teacher, doesn't he pay this yearly toll, this yearly tribute? And Peter said, yes. Now, whether he'd ever discussed this with Jesus or not, we really don't know. But he did say yes. And when he was come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying. You know that the word prevent today means to hinder or to restrain. But when the King James Version of the Bible was translated in early 1611 or so, it meant to go before rather than to hinder or to keep from progressing. So Jesus actually interrupted Peter as Peter was going into the house. He anticipated what Peter was going to do. And so he asked him these questions as he interrupted Peter going into the house. He actually just sort of said, come this way. He anticipated his problem, maybe to keep Peter from being embarrassed and humiliated. You know, Peter very quickly answered, why, yes, he does. And then I guess he thought, I better run in the house and ask him to make sure I answered correctly. And maybe he's going to say no. And if he does, then I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. And all of we people who have foot and mouth disease understand the circumstance that Peter was in. A lot of times without even thinking, we say, why, sure he does. And then we go, oh, well, maybe he doesn't. So Jesus got in front of him and detracted him, brought him off to the side and said, Peter, what do you think about this circumstance? What do you think about what I am about to tell you? In other words, form an opinion about this. What thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? Now, he's not talking about this tax in the sense of using the same word. He's just saying, look, in this world, Peter, and the kings of this world, who do they take custom from? And the word custom here means what is paid for a public end, a toll or a tax. A tax literally to improve things, like build roads and public buildings and things. You know, Rome had a public tax, and it was used for the good of the country. So Jesus said, who do they expect, kings expect to pay this custom? And tribute is like a poll tax. It's paid by every person, such as when Jesus was born. They were taking a census. And every person who's in this census then has to pay a particular amount of money. That goes to the empire, goes to the king, to the kingdom. Well, Jesus is using something these people knew very well, Peter knew very well. He said, now look, when a king is going to tax people, who does he tax? His own children or the people who are strangers to his family? Well, that's an easy question for Peter to answer. The word stranger here is a word that means all the others. It doesn't have anything to do with ethnicity or ethnic. It just means the king's family, and then this word foreigner means everybody else that's not in his family. Allos, others, other people. It was an easy question. Peter said unto him, of strangers. Jesus said unto him, then are the children free. The word free here means being able to go wherever you want to, or being at liberty, having total liberty. The idea is this. What is this tax for? It's to support the temple based on what was written in the book of Exodus. Who owns the temple? Does not God? And didn't Jesus call it my Father's house? And so Jesus is saying to Peter, my Father owns the house that is supported by this tax. And I am his child. I am his direct descendant. Should I then pay this tax? Am I obligated to pay it since I am the king's child? And of course, Peter had answered the question when he said, of strangers. And the children are at liberty not to pay this tax. Jesus is speaking of himself and not of his disciples. They were not the children of God in the sense that Jesus was. And he couldn't simply say, well, if you're my disciple, then you're excluded from paying this tax or this toll. But he is specifically talking about himself because he's the Father's Son. He has no obligation to pay tribute to support his house. If this included all who are God's children, then they would be they would not be obligated to pay tribute. And this eventually would leave the house of God desolate and unsupported. So what did Jesus say? All right, notwithstanding, all right. You understand and I understand that I have no obligation, since I am the king's son, to pay this money to support the king's business. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them. And the word offend means to cause to stumble or even to count as unimportant, or literally to make these people feel like they're not doing anything that is worthwhile. And Jesus said, I don't want to make these people feel as though they're involved in something that is not worthwhile, that's useless. So in order to avoid them having that feeling, and in order to not make their job more difficult, that even has that idea in this word offend, to not make what they're doing more difficult for them to do. Jesus didn't want these good men who were doing a good work according to the scriptures, and he didn't want to embarrass them because they would have had to have made a report to the elders that here's a man who won't pay his tax. So in order to avoid embarrassing and humiliating these people, Jesus said for Peter to go fishing. Now that's not a bad piece of advice. He didn't tell him, Peter, you're going to have to get a job at Kmart in order to get some money and pay this. Or he didn't say, take an offering among all the other disciples. You know, there's something very poetic about this. And that is, Jesus said, go down to the sea and cast an hook. Now, we're not talking about nets. But go down to the sea and cast a hook. And take up the fish that first comes up. Now, this is a one-on-one thing. Go down to the sea, cast out a hook, and the first fish that you catch, bring it up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. Now, the piece of money that Jesus said Peter would find was not the one we looked at earlier in its description. A half or a double drachma. That's what was originally mentioned whenever he says, dost thou not pay tribute? doesn't he give the double drachma, which is worth about 30 cents? But here the Bible tells us you will find a piece of money, and this was a piece of money that bore the name a stater. And this stater was a coin equal to 4 drachma. It had a value of about 60 cents. Something of that nature. And it was silver in its appearance. Now, how the coin got into the fish, I don't have any idea. But you remember that this is a silver coin. It's bright and shiny. It could have fallen out of someone's pocket. I'm not discounting the miracle of it. I'm just telling you what it is. It's a very shiny coin. It was in the fish's mouth, and it was worth enough to pay not only the tribute of Jesus, but the tribute of Peter. That take and give unto them for me and thee. Not only did Jesus pay this tribute, but he also provided the money so that Peter might pay the tribute. It was enough to pay the tax for Peter and for Jesus. But there wasn't a tremendous amount left over. It was just about enough to pay for that and perhaps another person. Very difficult to find out these amounts and make application in our coinage amounts today. It wasn't a whole lot, but it was enough to do what Jesus felt he, as an inhabitant of this earth, was obligated to do, and also what Peter should do. But even though he was not obligated in the sense of bound by law, there was another obligation, and the obligation that he felt was not to offend those men who were doing the work, not to make them feel unimportant, not to make it their job more difficult. And that ought to be, within itself, an important lesson for us to learn. You know, sometimes we talk about giving people a hard time. Sometimes when we're in a bad mood, or things have gone badly for us, we just like to create a circumstance where other people are going to have to labor a lot harder, where we can actually embarrass and humiliate them because we're not feeling well or because something happened to us. I don't know how to gauge humanity in society and culture. I've been on this earth about 60 years and I hadn't been paying attention but about 15. I mean, before I really started paying attention, about 15 years, that I've actually begun to think about man and who he is and the circumstances. The rest of the time, I was just doing my job. But the last few years, I've begun to think about a lot of things and see a lot of things and try to figure out a lot of things. And about the time I get all this ready, I'm going to die. That's the way things happen. Just about the time you get smart enough to live in this world and have enough knowledge to know what's right and wrong, what's important and isn't, then you die. So somebody comes along, just as ignorant as they can be, takes your shoes, and they live until they know pretty well what's going on, then they die. So it's left for every generation to learn, but we never learn it early. We always learn it late. And that's why the Bible teaches us that the elders in a society are the ones that ought to be in positions of leadership. Doesn't have anything to do with who's smart and who isn't smart. It has to do with who's already learned and who has something to learn. Jesus avoided making a difficult circumstance for someone on this world. And I think it's important that we avoid making life difficult for people for no other reason than to simply embarrass and humiliate them. And I think people make a lot of enemies that way. It's something people don't forget. You know, you think that whatever it is you're involved in and just out of cruelty, you make it very difficult for some person on the job, somebody that's waiting on you in a restaurant, somebody that's in service or somebody that's on the phone that you're on the phone with. Just make that life difficult for them for no other reason than to make life difficult for them. People don't usually forget that. We don't usually forget that. And to be embarrassed and humiliated in order to be taught a lesson oftentimes teaches us the wrong lesson. And sometimes it's true of our own children. I know people who have the idea that if I can get my child in a circumstance and then really embarrass that boy or embarrass that girl, when I do that, they'll learn a big lesson. But the lesson they may learn may be bitterness and anger. And I think Jesus wanted to avoid this kind of circumstance. So he said, Peter, go down to the sea, catch a fish. It's already there with a coin in it. Pay the tribute. It's what I don't owe it, but you do. But I'll provide the money so that we can pay that which we are obligated to pay. Now, what about the church? I mean, we make some sort of application of this in regard to the church. Who's to pay? And I know that's kind of a subject perhaps people feel like a preacher ought to avoid. And to be quite frank with you, there is really not a specific circumstance in the New Testament that deals directly with the church members and the church and how much you ought to give. It's just not there. Yeah, well, there's a lot in the Bible about giving, like the scriptures Brother Darrell read. I understand that. But see, he was reading scriptures that had to do with a congregation who were going to take up an offering for the poor saints in Jerusalem. It wasn't something that was directing them on how to support the church specifically and directly. There are a lot of intimations. There are a lot of principles. We just don't see in the New Testament where a congregation of people came together, sat down, they took offerings, and the preacher said, now all of you people give 10%. It's just not there, people. He said, boy, that's great news. No, it isn't. It's not good news at all if you're stingy. Because in the book of Corinthians, we have more information than perhaps any other book about this kind of activity. And you'll see that there are just some very basic principles laid out here. In fact, in our vestibule on the table, there's a book there, and it's a newly printed book, a little book, and it's about the Landmark 3 lectures that were given up at Liberty this spring. There are 6 messages in that book. And one of them is the sermon I preached on Monday night. Brother Mark Thornton preached one message, and Brother John Owen preached a message on landmarkism and giving. That is, when you look at the Bible, what does the Bible teach you about giving? Now, that book's out there, and I laid a bunch of them out there, and they're free. That is, you don't have to pay for them. I did. I mean, LAMP did, Landmark Media Production. They're all paid for. So if you want to let us bear all the load, then don't give anything. You know, you want to be a moocher, go ahead and take one free. I can't charge you for it. Well, maybe you think I want something out of it, don't you? I think 500 books cost about $350, so, you know, you can gauge that in your giving. What I'm telling you is if you'd like to read a good sermon on how to give as a person in this church, take one of those books and read the sermon that Brother Owen preached. It has an explanation of these things that are mentioned here in 1 Corinthians, or rather in 2 Corinthians, because Paul talks about giving, and he talks about such things as on the first day of the week. Well, that's what Sunday, isn't it? So he's talking about give on the first day of the week. That's a good time to give. That's when the congregations evidently met. He talks about every man according as he purposes in his heart. Well, there's some sort of planning and purpose. So let him give. And he says, God loves a cheerful giver. God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. And here a promise is made. If a man gives like he ought to give to the work of God, God is more apt to bless his financial circumstances so that he can continue to give to support good things. Well, I think it's an excellent message, and I agree with what Brother Owen had written in that message. And I think I'd like for you to, like I said, they're free. I'm just joking you about it. If you'd like to give toward the printing of it, that's fine. But they're there for you to take, and there's more of them if you would like to have more of them. But we can't base our giving to the church on the children are free. That's not a good statement. We can't base it on Old Testament tithing because, in reality, it was flawed in the sense of trying to bring it over into the New Testament church age. Really, giving starts in the heart. And that's what God understands. And that because we love and because we care, we give. So don't limit your giving by some percentage. But you may want to guide yourself by some percentage so that you'll always give as a base figure a certain amount of your money. But Jesus didn't want to hurt somebody's feelings. He didn't want to make them feel unimportant. He didn't want to trivialize their job. He didn't make them feel like they were beggars. He didn't want to make them have to go fill out reports, make it more difficult for them to do what they were doing. Jesus said, we don't want to offend.